All right. Let's crank that up a little bit. All right, listen, this is my favorite part of the reading. You know, this is, I think it, all poets that read up here before, I really welcome you to read your poetry up here because it gives you a chance to read. It gives you a chance to try something new. So don't be afraid to come up and share your work with the other poets. I think it's important because the only way you really learn to read is to actually do it. And I honestly believe it's harder to sit up here than in front of a jury, because I've done both. And this is, what you're doing here is you're exposing yourself. I mean, you are like naked. You're taking your soul and you're throwing it out there. And you hope everybody, of course, loves the applause. Not everybody's going to like your work or going to approve of it, but you still have to try it. And sometimes, you know, you'll get up here. I've bombed more times than I want to imagine. But that's all right. Because then eventually you're going to, you know, you're going to find that nugget and keep doing it. So don't be afraid to get out here. And I honestly believe this. There's no such thing as bad poetry. Hey, thanks, man, for buying that. Okay, cool. There's no such thing because you're taking your soul and you're like casting it out there. And for people to kind of look at it and exposing yourself to all your shortcomings or your heights. All right, now this is very difficult over here because this is, it looks like Jake is.
I'll try this one. I'm Gene
Hirsch. Oh, there you go. I'm sorry. That's not my fault now.
Let me see. Oh, yeah.
No.
That's a doctor's signature.
That's a doctor's signature. Hair doc. Hair doc.
Can you hear me now? How about now? Is that better? Okay, good. Okay. House call. Carpets of roaches sniveled and sexed on the walls in the stunning dark. With a sudden flip of the switch, with the racing light, they cowered, frenzied, flew for the cracks down through a gaping hole in the floor to a junk dirt basement where no human cared to go. Last week's grits clung to the pan greased on the stove, empty tins bathed in their cutting stench, and a TV ranted through the house, through mornings and noon times and evenings, stuffed with chic fashions and wealth. A lonely crucifix hung above his bed with the lonely Jesus who suffered to watch over him, twitching the muscles of his neck to bend his kind head, staring down, accustomed by now to the placid squalor in which he had to swim, alone, always alone, in this pool of bare-boned desperation. On a table, as on a mountain peak, capped with the soot-laden snow of degenerate, on that table, in his living room, a splendid chessboard, soldiers demented, stiff, and starved, hardly ever used anymore, hardly ever spoken to by anyone who hardly ever came to call.
Thanks, Doc. Walt Peterson.
I think it's easier holding that Walt than rather than
mess with it. Hello. Goodbye. This part of our program is called This Day in Poetry History, 1214 BCE, before the Christian era. Did you ever wonder the story behind these poems and what really went down? Well, we did an interview with Lita, you know, Lita and the Swan. Lita was actually the queen, her king was Tyndarus from Sparta, and she was the mother of Helen of Troy and Clytemnestra. So it's called Lita's Story, and I wanted to thank Jan Beatty, who is not here, for the concept and the explanation of a mercy, F asterisk asterisk K, which will come up in the poem. Okay, 1214 BCE, Lita's Story. Starts with an epigraph. How can those terrified vague fingers push the feathered glory from her loosening thighs? I know you've heard the poet's story. It makes me look like a royal piece of meat. So be it. It was for mercy's sake, really. Our gods were ancient, dying. Understand, I saw through Sybil's eyes the Romans, Jews, and then the Arabs. They would all bring their gods. Old gods are worse than old men. Zeus's feathered glory, more like a raven's stump. Zeus begged me, wanted me, my beauty. Remember, Helen showed what one man would do to another for a woman's beauty? She was my daughter, a golden apple from this golden bough. I pray my husband, King Tyndarus, when he is old, will touch me with love and tenderness, not strut and puff and hide his flaccid member. That's all this woman wants. Yes, when I knew Zeus and did him, it was, well, as you might say, a mercy fuck. Homage to a dying legend, not more. Let me proceed. I found real love beyond Sparta's walls. He was a young carpenter, a sculptor, and with this commoner, Zeus would punish me for chuckling at his feathered glory? God, I was just glad to be beyond the battlements of Sparta. All that military discipline bores my royal ass. I took my time falling in love, this woman's prerogative. After I studied him, my maids prepared his modest house and left me alone. I changed regal purple for light blue to match these eyes. I watched him plane lumber to smooth, beautiful boards. He worked with saw and as and gouge. His powerful arms and legs, how he bent his back and caressed the grain with rough, manly hands. I praised Zeus then for what he stirred in my loins, my young man's hair like shavings curling from smooth wood. I surprised him, buried my face in his neck, his hair. Remember Hephaestus, blacksmith to the gods, the stout veins in his forearm from forging weapons all day? Then you know the vein of my lover's tool. But he never knew I was his queen. Try commanding someone to trust and love. He thought me a silly, sensual courtesan, not his queen. It was better that way. I tricked him, but we crushed summer evenings like grappa for our pleasure. One day, my loving carpenter will see me in state procession. Till then, he'll never guess he pinched a royal buttocks. All that summer, I taught him to love me as he caressed his wood, my skin the exotic grain of his lumber, my haughty bearing. He loved it all. By autumn, I was with children, his. It had to stop. A queen may do as she pleases and cut her lover's tongue out, flog him till his skeleton becomes an armature for her gowns, then pray to the gods to find her another pretty face. Not I. I sent my faithful lady to serve him. Such tenderness and beauty as his should not lay fallow for too long, the pettiness of God's notwithstanding. I pray that she'll attend him until he is old and blind, but way before them, save me a roiled hump or two. I told the King Tyndarus of the bird god, not my sculptor. He fell to the castle's marble floors to praise Zeus for diddling his queen, and he let my little adventure go at that. Vanity, thy name is manhood. Two girls came from our summer lie. Helen, the beautiful fool, had to learn her lesson from suffering. Clytemnestra, my favorite and only half wise, paid the price. Women, let the poet praise the right gods rightly, but claim your just reward in life. Poets have always sung their song for some god's vain promises of immortality. Thank you.
Hello. Eddie returns from Nam. I get this information right from Eddie's mouth. He is the horse that went to Nam, pulled the wagon that was my weight. Had I applied for student deferral, it wouldn't have mattered. Conscription number 304. Never called to action, didn't matter. Not fit for duty, seizures that could turn sprayed lead on comrades in arms, didn't matter. Though I thought I felt guilt, despite grounds for exception, it was really shame for not pulling the wagon. Eddie, who grew up literally next door, three brothers, two sisters, a father dead at 42. Looks far down the fairway to a small pine before addressing the dimpled ball. See that tree, he asks, but then pauses for effect. We could hit it from a distance of 25 miles. New 20s. I tell him how good we felt when news reached us that he had met a familiar face. Jean, who lived a block away. In my ignorance, ask him to relate the joyful reunion. Eddie's expressions always told you that here there was no bull. So when he tells me his unit lost 30 men, half the camp, he says, one night, and that Jean arrived in the early morning hours to find him in tears, no joy, no consolation, there's no need for validation. In my early youth, Porkchop Hill met naive eyes. And when it was over, it was over. Later, I realized the soldier depicted by John Wayne in the Green Berets has never and will never exist. I watched daily reports on the small screen when blood was gray and the pop, pop, pop staccato of AK-47s and the familiar whoomp of mortar tubes were distinct sounds of conflict. Microphones in the field fed the beat of chopper blades until anyone from that era could identify a Huey. One would think that all that information would enable anyone to get it. But the pompous me, blinded by righteousness, and the macho me with the go-get-em mindset of a gorilla, blinded me to politics, to the games men play for power over other men, I would still not get it. Being of the world, it took years to realize that when it was over, only applied to those of us who lived in that sphere of experience. To know that a serene game in a serene setting could never purge the demons of Eddie's mind, dug in for his duration.
Mark Goldman.
Let's just do one page, everybody, okay?
Somebody's got parking. Parking shouldn't be a problem.
After 10 points.
Okay, it's there. This poem is entitled Adventure at Sea, and it started out as a boy, my relationship with the earthworm was conventional, but with the advent of the computer worm as a tool of sabotage, my view of the earthworm began to change, and I realized that the earthworm has many aspirations. Adventure at Sea. Some biologists and others, you know the type, classify the worm as an invertebrate and equate him with spinelessness. I hope you don't agree. More adaptable than most, he is delicate but has plenty of backbone. Appreciated for his simplicity, but for the most part taken for granted. He exhausts his days in the garden with so much ground to cover. He has more adversaries than he'd care to list. Though he's not interested in international intrigue, many of his colleagues are being enticed by financial gain. You know how money talks. Sidelined from nature's goal to pursue careers in espionage and counter-espionage. A worm being enlisted as an electronic saboteur. Weapons can inflict pain, but he can be more disabling. Unlike mankind, which demands good fortune and stability, he requires little of the earth, rain and warmth and nourishment. He senses the uncertainty and omnipotence of the heavens. Grant me another day, he prays. His predators and adversaries range from birds to fish, not Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Others assume, given ample free time, he would enjoy leisure in the lawn. Few know he's an avid fisherman, much like Hemingway, a passion for the sport. He hears Hollywood's auditioning for a remake of The Old Man and the Sea. You remember Spencer Tracy catching a marlin. He hopes there's a part for him, the dream of a lifetime. Nobody would have guessed. An adventure at sea, a tug of war, clinging to a rope, clinging, surviving the catch. He won't succumb to sadness, counting the final strokes, a fish's slow tapping tail. Thank you.
Artie Sullivan.
Thank you, Jimmy and Joan, and thanks especially to the four great poets we heard to begin with tonight. Joseph, the philosopher poet, a good friend of mine, and Richard St. John, who really brings out the ceremony of writing and the ceremony of life itself, and in such a beautiful way. Romilla, the beautiful blues and the jazz that is in our poetry. and Jay and beautiful words that he gave us tonight. And this is a short one. It's July the 3rd, and I just wrote it on July the 3rd. July 3rds are so pre-climactic. The only fireworks, the little annoying jolts from the tossings of tots. I could go to Starbucks to write my poems to the accompaniment of keyboard clicks of the Wi-Fi'd wanderers. Or maybe I should drive to the supermarket for some baby beef ribs. Take them home to lather with molasses, Tabasco, and brown sugar. Every 15 minutes in a 350 oven. Recipe courtesy of the black family that adopted my brother-in-law for a few days when he refused to go home to celebrate anything with his family. No, I think I'll sit here for a while and try to cook up some lines to go with tomorrow's televised fireworks. Thank you.
For whatever reason, I've been thinking a lot about James Brown, especially after he died. It felt bad to me. I've been a big fan for a while, and this is sort of how I dealt with that. It's different, but dress rehearsal for James Brown's memorial service, Augusta, Georgia, 2006. Bootsy Collins arrives late and has to pay a $100 fine. On stage at the eponymous arena, our star and his backing band, the Soul Generals, crouch in a circle to go over choreography and entrances. The costume changes. An X in black electrical tape will be placed nearby to show the college president where to stand for the posthumous doctorate presentation. Paths will have to be kept clear so nachos and pretzels can make their way to mourners. Well, he thinks, at least the video montage is ready. I won't be here, Brown barks for the fifth time. Don't fuck this up. He begins to rush everyone as his energy shifts to New York City, to the other dress rehearsal. He imagines his body encased in gold atop a horse-drawn carriage en route to the Apollo Theater, where longtime MC Danny Ray will drape him in a sequined Boy Who Cried Wolf cape. Thanks.
I was especially interested in Rick St. John's poem because I have visited Hiroshima twice, and I brought this poem tonight because the anniversary of the bombing, the atom bombing of Hiroshima is in about a month. This poem is about one of the memorials in Hiroshima, and it is written in a Japanese poetic form called Renga, which alternates stanzas in haiku form with stanzas of two lines of seven syllables each. You have a little problem?
Wait, push it this way. There, over there. Read over there.
Read over here.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever you say.
There you go.
Okay. Okay. Well, oh, okay. Is it all right now?
Yeah.
Okay, good, okay. Peace clock tower. Air shudders, resounds, chimes high atop steel tower, peal old requiem. At 8:15 each morning, recall that August moment. Wooden homes caught fire, ponds dried up, trees ignited, man-made sun-filled sky. Is there still a problem with that?
Yeah, we're running into feedback.
Okay, well, actually, maybe I could just read it without it.
Yeah,
go ahead. Okay, I'll begin again. Peace clock tower. Air shudders, resounds, chimes high atop steel tower, peal old requiem. At 8:15 each morning, recall that August moment,
Wooden homes caught fire. Ponds dried up. Trees ignited. Man-made sun filled sky. Tolling wakens remembrance. Human shadows charred on walls. Thirsting throngs in flight. All havens turned inferno. First dead, luckiest. Chimes fall silent, yet their plea echoes through reborn city. Perpetual flame illuminates vow cut in stone. No more such evil.
Thank you. Sheriff Colton.
Fall, but I'll give it a you know what? I don't think I need it. But I do have a book, Rust Belt, for $10 if anyone should be interested. I'm going to read one from it. This one's called Here. This stone of gray cut marble with mother's name carved in cold relief. Today, summer breezes roll in and roll away. This cemetery adorns a grassy hillside with fluttering VFW flags. Outside, cars pass by the wrought iron fence. This town, forged by steel, fueled by coal, surveys the enduring river that drifts by accounts receivable. This state, a railroad constructed through Penn's Woods, a safe harbor for the Liberty Bell. This nation, across the deep blue Atlantic, spoke of generations to Europe. Grandfather listened. This opportunity, labor and management intersected fluid life. A century turns here to these swaddling hills, accepting my mother. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, all ready. You want the microphone, Michelle?
I think I can do without that thing unless it stops whistling.
Oh, this is my book, $20. I have a few. The Maparium. The Maparium is a room. Round like a ball and lined with glass, and lights behind the glass to light the bright colors of all the countries of the world. We enter the earth at the equator. We walk right through the middle of the earth on a heavy glass bridge and study and examine the surface of the earth from the inside. I could stay here forever. If I lean over the bridge just a little way, I can almost see the very tip of South America. If I lean too far over, I could slide right down the glassy inside of the earth to the South Pole and back and forth and back and forth until someone comes with a bucket and a rope tied to the handle to toss the bucket over the edge to reach me. But suppose I am quiet and sit in the center of the South Pole, quiet and patient, awaiting my fate. They cannot see me through the heavy glass bridge. It is too thick to see through, and they are too smart to lean over too far.
John Joseph from Baravello. Could you all hear me? Poet from Madagascar that I translated. This is the only complete English translation. Okay.
The black glassmaker, of whom no one has ever looked upon his countless eyes, and his shoulders even, that none has ever made shrug, this slave all adorned with beads of glass, who is robust as Atlas, and who carries the seven heavens upon his head. People say the multifarious river of clouds will carry him away, the river where his loincloth has already been soaked. Thousands and thousands of fragments of glass fall from his hands, but rebound towards his brow, bruised by the mountains where the winds are born. And you witness his daily torment and his labor without end. You witness his thunderstruck agony as sea conches resound to the ramparts of the east. But you no longer feel pity for him, and it no longer even occurs to you that his suffering begins again each time the sun capsizes. Thank you. This is just a haiku. This is for Edna. Kabuki Farm, black cows with white faces acting like cows.
Okay, man. I'm going to wind it down here with a short poem. I think poetry should be fun and sometimes even stupid, I guess. This is called Rude Awakening. I don't know why, but I, half asleep and half awake, I started to sing. This is the way I squeeze the boob, squeeze the boob, squeeze the boob. This is the way I squeeze the boob early in the morning. I reached over and squeezed her love jugs and nudged closer. She elbowed me right in the center of my forehead. Ow. And she started to sing. This is the way the cyclops sings, cyclopsies, cyclopsies. This is the way the cyclopsies early in the morning. There was an egg in the center of my head, and I watched her get out of bed, walk into the bathroom, and half shut the door. I rubbed the lump on my head and thought, now I know about squeezing boobs and cyclopses in the land of Nod between sleep and awake. Till next week. Bye-bye.